You are Locked On Packers.
I feel like we can run the table.
Your daily Green Bay Packers podcast.
Rodgers gets out.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Floats it.
Your team.
Cobb.
Every day.
Touchdown.
You are Locked On Packers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Peter Bukowski, and I cover the Packers for The Leap, a newsletter I would love for you to subscribe to. Follow me on Twitter at Peter_Bukowski. Follow the podcast on Twitter at Locked On Packers. Like us on Facebook. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, on Spotify, on Google Podcasts. Wherever you find podcasts, you will find Locked On Packers, the number one Packers podcast on the internet. And the show for fans who know what happened, they want to know why and how. It's crossover Thursday. Jake Liskow from Locked On Bengals is here to talk about a Week 5 matchup that has been wildly overshadowed. At least it was on Wednesday by the news of the day. An absolutely bonkers loaded news day from the Packers' perspective. On Tuesday, okay, when we woke up Wednesday morning even, it seemed like the big news of Wednesday would be the update on Jaire Alexander. And we got one of those, sort of. More on that in a second. Then news broke pretty early in the morning, I'm talking like 7:38 East Coast time. Adam Schefter drops the bomb that Stephon Gilmore is available. He's been released by the New England Patriots. And almost immediately, reports have him connected to the Green Bay Packers. And not just connected, but that Greg Bedard, formerly of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, now runs his own site covering Boston sports. He said the league sources are saying the Packers are the favorite. Albert Breer, who is at Sports Illustrated, MMQB, but is very hooked into the Boston scene, is on Boston radio all the time. He says Stephon Gilmore wants to play for the Packers. Now, it would require some cap shenanigans potentially. And the thought was about midday, oh, okay, well, this is actually going to be a trade probably leaked so that the Patriots could get something after they tried to get something. And the Packers could just give up, you know, a day two, day three pick. I was thinking second, third rounder even for Stephon Gilmore. It turns out he's going to Carolina for a sixth round pick. And the initial reaction from a lot of people, especially Packers fans, but it wasn't just Packer fans. This happened a little bit, you know, 49ers Nation, Buccaneers fans, et cetera, going, what the heck? Why didn't we make this move? Sixth round pick? Come on, go do something. You know, pokes Brian Gutekunst with stick meme. Here is what we I think can glean from the timeline based on the reporting. The Patriots reached out, and this has been, by the way, ongoing. Rob Domofsky added his portion of this after the trade was announced. The Patriots reached out to a select group of teams and said, what can you do for us? There was not much traction there. This is a guy coming off a major quad injury. He was not playing great before the injury, but this is the 2019 Defensive Player of the Year we're talking about, at a premium position with big game experience, you know, a Super Bowl ring. Still, you've got an aging corner coming off a major leg injury and in the last year of his contract, presumably wanting a new deal. And at first, that was the big problem for any deal was, I want a contract. If you're going to trade me, that's fine. I want a contract. The Patriots clearly didn't want to give him the money. By the way, first red flag. Now, the Patriots always want to get out too early than too late. But if the Patriots don't want to pay you, something to think about. I think the Packers are much the same way. There are certain teams that you just trust on this stuff. And reportedly, and this is something that has been you know, part of the buzz in league circles for a long time, the Packers had been among teams previously involved in discussions with the Patriots. That this goes back to last year when it looked like he was going to be on the trade block before the injury. And
they were, I think, pretty obviously part of the conversations in this go round. I believe multiple reports that says Stephon Gilmore was interested in Green Bay. I also believe, and said so as a speculation before Rob Domofsky reported it to be the case, that part of the reason why the Patriots had made it so clear by leaking to the media that the Packers were interested is because Stephon Gilmore wanted to go to Carolina and they were trying to extract some value from the Panthers. According to Domofsky, the Packers did not believe they could take on the Gilmore contract in a trade, that it was untenable, that the best way to do it was to be able to sign him. And then they could basically sign him to a vet minimum deal with, you know, $11, $12 million signing bonus that they could spread out with void years, something like that. And that would make sense. That would make a lot of sense for them, actually. Whether Stephon Gilmore was open to that, we don't really know. But multiple reports, including Bedard's own, say he was interested in going to Green Bay. So that part of it is real. Green Bay's interest was real. The money part of this is complicated, and I wouldn't be surprised if in the next week, in the next 24 hours, 48 hours, we find out that the Panthers are going to give Stephon Gilmore some sort of monster deal. They have the cap space to do that. Green Bay would have had to do it in a more creative way. They could not give him some monster deal, some mega deal, some four-year monstrosity. They were going to have to give him a one-year deal that could maybe be a two-year deal, but probably voids. I mean, there's always money in the banana stand. I say this all the time. It could have been workable. It seems like the Packers thought they could get him if he needed to sign somewhere. But that what ended up happening was the two preferred destinations for Gilmore were Carolina and Green Bay. The Patriots used the Packers' interest and Stephon Gilmore's interest in Green Bay as leverage with Carolina to say, give us something. Just give us something. You have a chance to get him if we just cut him outright. But you know you're going to get him. And the Packers, they're not super pumped about giving us anything. So we want you to give us something. That seems to be how this played out. It is not a situation, best I can tell, and based on all the reporting, where the Packers cheaped out. This is not a situation where Green Bay said, we won't give up the pick. How do I know that? Why do I think that? Well, you know where it would have been really appealing to Stephon Gilmore? A place he can win a title. Kansas City. They would have given up a fifth round pick. No question for Stephon Gilmore. The Bucks. No question they would have given up a pick. The 49ers, the Seahawks, and obviously Carolina. Carolina would have given up a fifth if they would have asked for one. But Stephon Gilmore wanted to go to Carolina. He's from outside Charlotte, and that was probably his most preferred destination. So you only have access to the players that want to play for you and that you are in a position to acquire. Now, does all of this throw into question the Kevin King signing when it was made? Yes, because one of the reasons why they didn't have the cap space, even after rearranging Aaron Rodgers' money and all of the salary cap machinations that they had to go through to get under the cap, they had to fully guarantee Kevin King's contract week one, because he's a vested vet. So moving on, they couldn't just like cut him and bring in Stephon Gilmore. It doesn't give them any cap relief to do that. He was going to count against the cap no matter what. And he's not a starting caliber player for the Packers, or at least when everyone is healthy. Now, we add the context. Jaire Alexander is out. And we thought we were getting an update. Matt LaFleur says they're trying to avoid surgery at all costs, doing everything they can to avoid surgery. That means rehab, a brace, shoulder sleeves, these kinds of things, and hope it doesn't get worse. Can you rehab it? You know, mild practices during the week and then get out there on Sundays, gut it out and try and do the rehab and healing process all over. This is what they're talking to experts trying to figure out. This is how they're trying. Are there different things that can be done? What kind of damage could be done if they continue this way, if they don't surgically repair it? So that tells us that the injury is bad enough that it could be surgically repaired, but not potentially bad enough that it definitely requires it. And so they're trying to avoid the surgery. The player always wants to play. That's the reality. The player always wants to play. They did bring in Rasul Douglas. They signed him off the Cardinals practice squad. He was with the Carolina Panthers last year. And I said this on Twitter, and some people looked at me kind of sideways about it because they had never heard of Rasul Douglas, which I understand. And I said, if you had told me before the year, my choice was Rasul Douglas or Kevin King to start a corner for the Green Bay Packers, I would take Douglas. By the way, Pro Football Focus agrees with me. They had him a better coverage grade than guys like Patrick Peterson, Stephon Gilmore, by the way, when he got hurt, Casey Hayward, and of course, Kevin King, Josh Jackson, et cetera, et cetera. Now, if your starting outside corners are Rasul Douglas, Kevin King, and Eric Stokes, if that's your three, oof, especially against a team like the Bengals, when you have a shifty slot receiver like Tyler Boyd, who is a great route runner and knows how to get open, I don't know that that is ideal for you. My guess is they're going to go Stokes and King on the outside and Shannon Sullivan in the slot. And I think that is their best hope right now. And they're very lucky not to have Kevin King. I think if in March they would have signed Douglas instead of King, they could have made this deal. And that's what makes today all the weirder as we're recording this. From a Packers standpoint, Ian Rappaport is reporting as we're recording this that Jalen Smith is on the Packers radar. So, man, it's bizarre. It is a bizarre day. We're going to have to see as the week goes on. You hope Kevin King gets cleared through concussion protocol because they need all the boundary corners they can get. They can't go into a game with Stokes, no King, a brand new player to their defense, and Isaac Yiadom as their boundary corners. That leaves you perilously thin. And I think Douglas is probably a better player than Yiadom to start with. So I don't know. I like the Douglas move in a vacuum. I would have liked it a lot in March if they said, okay, instead of signing Kevin King, we'll sign this guy for the vet minimum. That would have made a lot more sense, but have been a lot better use of resources. I think you could have justified the King contract a little bit better if there had been scheme continuity, not a brand new scheme. Like, it's not like you're bringing in a guy who knows the defense. He doesn't. It's a brand new defense. And it's not a defense that suits him either. So the King signing is curious to me. It has only become more curious. And I'm not going to pretend to understand it. I don't understand it. I don't understand why they felt the need to do that. And I think today is the kind of day where you're going, man, this really looks worse in retrospect. Today's episode is brought to you by our friends at Rock Auto. Rock Auto is the place where you can save money on car parts. Going to buy car parts is a hassle. It is a pain because I don't know about you. I'm not an expert. I don't know what I'm looking at. I don't know what I'm supposed to be paying. And guess who knows that? The person behind the counter. And they're going to punch in their numbers on their computer, figure out what's in their warehouse, and they're going to sell it to you for whatever price they feel like charging you. So why spend 30%, 50%, even 100% more at chain stores or dealerships when you could go to rockauto.com, a family business that's been serving auto parts customers online for nearly a generation. This is a place that you can feel good about giving your money and you're saving money at the same time. Write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. Before we get to the crossover part of all of this, I do think it is important that we talk about some of the late breaking news yesterday afternoon. Jalen Smith is coming to Green Bay, according to Ian Rappaport. Details still being worked out as of this recording. So trying to figure out what that looks like. The original podcast that we did and video that we did was recorded before those details came out. You can check out that full video on our YouTube page. We kept it up. Jalen Smith was once a highly touted linebacker, recruit, highly touted linebacker prospect before a pretty serious nerve problem at Notre Dame caused him to fall down draft boards. Dallas drafted him anyway. He's rehabbing that whole first season. He ends up getting a pretty big extension, one that I was pretty dubious of when it happened. And so I don't know what the plan here is. Are they going to convert him to outside linebacker? Maybe, you know, could he be someone who helps them as a blitz package player? Someone like Oren Burks, who can do a little bit of both. Not a bad idea. I think this is more a reaction to where their inside linebacker room is. Now, Chris Barnes returned to practice on Wednesday, and I think that's an important step for this defense. Ty Summers has just not been good enough. Oren Burks has been, you know, pretty okay in their nickel and especially in their dime packages. But Jalen Smith is a potential upgrade over that. Not over Chris Barnes at this point, I would say. I think Barnes is probably the better player. Now, are there reasons to be optimistic? I don't know. Optimistic might be overselling it for me. But you could see a path where, okay, maybe he wasn't healthy or maybe he wasn't in the best situation for him in Dallas and just needed a fresh start. I don't know. They seem pretty supportive of him. Now, Dan Quinn comes in, new system. I just don't really know what to expect here. I think it is a worthy risk from this standpoint is at one point in his career, he was a useful player. Those days might be past him, but for what I assume is basically nothing from a money standpoint, I get it. And you're turning over the back end of your roster. I don't think Chris Barnes is going to scoff at playing special teams if that's what it takes. You know, Burks and Summers are already core special teamers. So, I mean, bringing someone like Jalen Smith in and seeing what he's got, I think it's a worthy gamble. Do I think it changes their life? No. Do I think he's going to be in the mix to play this week? No. So that gives us a little bit of time here to figure out what's going on. But I think it is important that we try and figure out what they're going to do with him. We don't know yet. And maybe we'll hear more about this after you know, there's some sort of announcement. Brian Gutekunst will meet with the press presumably tomorrow and announce both the Jalen Smith signing and the Russell Douglas signing and give some explanation to what's going on there. So for now, it is, I guess, an interesting move. I don't think anyone should expect him to be, you know, the guy that he was maybe 3 years ago. He's not that player physically anymore. And I think from an instinct standpoint, there's been some issues there. The linebacker play in Dallas has been much better since Micah Parsons arrived. Leighton Vander Esch has played better this year than he had it under the previous scheme. So again, this is one of those that I don't really know what to expect, but it's a worthy gamble. It's a worthy gamble in the same way that Rick Wagner was and Christian Kirksey was and Devin Funchess was, guys that have some pedigree and some talent and some experience. And look, he got a big contract, didn't play that contract. Those are worthy guys. If you can get them on the cheap to come in and see if you can get something out of them. I don't think we should be expecting the moon, but so long as you come in with your eyes wide open to that, you know, maybe there is a pathway here to be pleasantly surprised by what he's able to give them. Devondre Campbell's played great. He played really good football the last couple of weeks. And I think Chris Barnes is someone who can be a useful player for them. So if you're just adding some competition to that room, like he's only going to play, Jalen Smith is, if he's good enough to play. And if he's good enough to play, then you have some competition there. And if Barnes or, God forbid, Devondre Campbell gets hurt, you have another player with experience who was a preferred starter for most of his career, who can step in and give you something. I think that's as far as it goes, really, at this point. So now that we've got that part of this taken care of, let's get to our crossover part of the episode. We are back for another crossover edition. It is a week 5 crossover edition. The Packers travel to Cincinnati to take on the Bengals. I'm Peter Bukowski, host of Locked On Packers, joined by one of the hosts of Locked On Bengals, Jake Lisco. And Jake, these two teams, very uncommon opponent. This is not exactly the league's oldest rivalry, but that makes these kinds of things fun, at least for me.
I actually really like it when the Bengals play the NFC North. It's been some fun years for the Bengals, including a year the Bengals swept the NFC North. Aaron Rodgers on the Dan Le Batard show in August was recounting his previous, one of his most frustrating games, he said, of his NFL career coming against the Bengals, which the Packers, he said they were down like 16-0 and then came back and they were winning by two scores toward the end of the game or were driving to kill the game. And then there was a fumble return for a touchdown when Aaron Rodgers missed a fumble. He recounted his two interceptions in that game. He's like, I always throw interceptions in Cincinnati. So, you know, Bengals fans would love to see that happen again. But I think things are very different for this edition. I think that was 8 years ago. And so different teams a little bit besides Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, Mason Crosby might be the only guy from that team that is on this team now. Jonathan Franklin was the running back of that team, a breakout star in that game, and unfortunately suffered a career-ending injury. Might have been in that game, but
really?
Maybe right after.
I don't recall that.
It is unfortunate because he was a really popular guy in that Packers locker room. So the Bengals, a bit of a surprise, 3-1 team. They come in, I think, feeling pretty good about what they've done, coming off a big win against Pittsburgh. They have that wild Minnesota game that they could have lost, and Minnesota could have lost 18 different times. So when you're looking at, okay, what is working for this team right now? What is the number one thing where you go, okay, this is what the Bengals can really hang their hat on right now?
Yeah, I mean, Joe Burrow in the last 2 weeks has looked like Joe Burrow in a better version, or the best version of Joe Burrow that we saw as a rookie. He's obviously not played a full season worth of games yet, but he's finally moving and making plays off script like himself. Prior to that, the Bengals kind of sheltered him a little bit, but the deep ball with Ja'Marr Chase seems to be unlocked so far. You know, totally flipped the script from last year when it was always, Joe Burrow ever going to be able to throw deep? And the memes are out there. You know, he's 37 years old, I guess, and he can't throw an opposite hash, you know, 35-yard vertical, which, you know, obviously he's done at age 24, by the way. But he's been really good in the last 2 weeks, and the offensive line appears to have taken a step in the right direction. The big thing to watch this week is this offense is still trying to be predicated off of Joe Mixon and running the football. And, you know, you listen to Brandon Staley talk about balance yesterday. I don't think it's quite the way that they're trying to do it in Los Angeles, but for the most part, the Bengals are trying to implement a lot more running game this year. Mixon's been pretty good, but we'll have to see what his status is. Generally speaking, the Bengals getting really healthy, but Joe Mixon, the big question is, it sounds like they're really going to bring him along slowly with a sprained ankle. And if you're running back with a sprained ankle, you know, there's a lot of horizontal lateral movement, and you probably take that a little bit easy.
Yeah, the Bengals are 20th in rush offense DVOA, but the Packers 27th in rush defense DVOA. So it is it's not quite strength against strength in that area. What do you think is different for the Bengals this year? Is Ja'Marr Chase the big reason why they're able to push the ball down the field a little bit more? Because they've had, you know, injuries to T. Higgins. They haven't really had their full complement of all these guys. It seems like Ja'Marr Chase, maybe it's Joe Burrow's comfort with him, that's been enough. Like, hey, I'll sling it deep if that's the guy I get to throw to.
I think that's certainly part of it. You heard Ja'Marr Chase after he scored his touchdown against Pittsburgh. He pretty much went and said, hey, throw it up to me. And Joe Burrow's like, okay, and I threw it up to him and he went and got it. And, you know, there are a few things there. One of them is certainly the comfort level between those two guys. Burrow's been throwing to Ja'Marr Chase like a number one, and teams are starting to treat him like a number one, following him with their top corner. And the Bengals, to their credit, have been creative, and they started to move him into the slot against Green Bay, as Mike Clay pointed out, against Jacksonville. As soon as Jacksonville started shadowing him, just to get him more favorable matchups. And they have been moving him all over the place, which is actually something they didn't get from AJ Green quite as much, I think, last year. And Ja'Marr Chase, the direct replacement for AJ Green. Joe Burrow has also improved, I think, in terms of his deep ball accuracy. He missed some early on, but in the last few games, he's looked fantastic. PFF's top graded quarterback in that time, vaulting up in the EPA per play leaderboards, whatever your metric is of choice. Joe Burrow in the last few games has been really good. Now, those games came against Pittsburgh and Jacksonville. two of the worst defenses in the league somehow. And TJ Watt didn't play for the Steelers. And I would say if TJ Watt isn't playing for the Steelers and Stephon Tuitt isn't playing for the Steelers, there's like one player on that defense, and that's Cam Hayward. And he was pretty good, but not good enough to mask the rest of the issues going on for Pittsburgh. So, you know, some quality of competition questions for sure. But when I look at the Green Bay matchup, it's like Adrian Amos, Kenny Clark, Preston Smith, and well, there's no Jair Alexander. So I see it as another one where Joe Burrow could potentially try to pick apart a defense again if given the opportunity.
How do you think they're handling this idea of hey, we like to play from empty. Joe Burrow wants to play from empty. You mentioned the offensive line has taken a step forward. That was the big question mark coming in. You and I talked about it on Locked On Today a couple of times. The idea of taking Ja'Marr Chase over someone like Penei Sewell or Rashawn Slater. How has that offensive line coalesced so far this season?
Well, the Bengals left tackle has been their best offensive lineman. Jonah Williams has been pretty good this year. I would call him a top, I don't know, half of the league at least left tackle. And he's been the solid player that I expected him to be. The left guard has been a pleasant surprise. Quentin Spain has taken a pretty big leap from where he was last year as he was cut from Buffalo and was trying to learn the ropes in Cincinnati. I mean, he was playing tackle in Cincinnati. He's very clearly not a tackle if you look at the way he plays and look at his build, but he's been pretty good at left guard. The concerned center right guard, Trey Hopkins, coming back from the ACL, hasn't been great this year. It's been pretty slow progress from him. At this point, I'm starting to ask the question, you know, have the injuries piled up too much for him? Because he's been dealing with them since coming out of Texas as an undrafted free agent and really slowly working his way into a starting job for the Bengals. Right guard Jackson Carman has had the job for the last 2 weeks. The rookie the Bengals picked, they trade back for and target in the second round very explicitly, and has left something to be desired, I think, in the run game. But as a pass blocker, I've actually been pretty impressed with his awareness, with his general movement ability. There's a touchdown the Bengals scored against Jacksonville where he gets his guy on the ground. The guy kind of trips a little bit, but Jackson Carman helps him to the ground for sure. And there's a looper coming around on the other side of the tackle, and Carman has his head on a swivel enough to go pick it up, kind of prevents a sack and allows Joe Burrow to get left and make the touchdown happen off script. So credit Jackson Carman for that sort of thing, doing a good job keeping his levels in space, doing a good job keeping his head on the swivel, looking for work and pass protection. And Riley Reiff at right tackle has been solid, steady. You know, he's not a world beater, but they have Bobby Hart there for years. And Bobby Hart, I don't think it's on a team. The guy that was starting at left guard for the Bengals last year, Mike Jordan, not on a team. Billy Price, a subject of unfortunate ridicule because he's a good guy. But, you know, the Bengals won that trade, getting BJ Hill from the Giants for Billy Price.
Defensively, and I almost feel bad because we spent a lot of time talking about this Cincinnati offense, and the defense has quietly been quite good. They're fifth in DVOA coming in to this game, 11th against the pass and sixth against the run. The thing that has really stood out to me is their front has been much better than it has been in years past. They add Trey Hendrickson, Larry Ogunjobi, who's been quite good for them, and Sam Hubbard as well, who just got the extension. So what has been the difference for this team this year?
The glue is DJ Reader playing like the stud he was expected to be when the Bengals got him from Houston. He was hurt for most of last year, but he's
really been underrated playing, signing.
He's been playing great too. And it's not just like as a run defender where he's been very good and is a reason that the Bengals linebackers look like they're all in the top 20 or so of the league, specifically Logan Wilson, who actually has taken a massive step forward, but is very much helped by a pretty dominant interior defensive line in front of him that's keeping him clean, letting him make plays. And to his credit, he's making those plays and has like three interceptions this year, which you certainly take for your second year linebacker from Wyoming, your third round pick. But DJ Reader
is listed on the Arlad's depth chart twice at linebacker.
Is that right?
he's listed at two linebacker slots as the starter.
There you go. He only plays one of those spots, but he is the every down linebacker for the Bengals. Jermaine Pratt, Akeem Davis Gaither used a little bit more flexibly, but he's been really good. But the big thing is, you know, that front playing great. Trey Hendrickson showing that he wasn't just a Cam Jordan beneficiary in New Orleans. He's been playing pretty well. And the interior defensive line from top to bottom are studs, from DJ Reader, Josh Tupou, to BJ Hill and Larry Ogunjobi. As you mentioned, those guys are all playing great.
The last thing I want to get to here before we turn the tables is how they're going to defend Davante Adams, because every team is going to do it a little bit differently. The Steelers brought bracket coverage a ton. Most teams that said, okay, we're going to live in too high. We're going to make sure that the safety to Davante Adams' side is shaded to that side if we can, and we're going to make the other guys beat us. How do you see Cincinnati trying to take care of Davante Adams in this game, insofar as any team can do it? Because no one has really found, you know, no one has locked him down.
I don't think there's a real way to handle Davante Adams and Aaron Rodgers together because those guys are so good together. But I'm thinking back, like the best receivers the Bengals have played this year are certainly the Minnesota pair and Adam Thielen and Justin Jefferson. And in that game, the Bengals shadowed Jefferson for the most part with their only healthy starting outside corner, Chidobe Awuzie, who's working back from a groin injury this week, but is at this point expected to play in practice this week. Wouldn't surprise me to see them do that again to some degree. I think he's a little bit better in terms of changing direction and hanging with those good route runners like Adams. And you'll probably see them try to put speed on speed with Trey Waynes against the, you know, some of the deep threats.
Marquez Valdes-Scantling is on IR, unfortunately. So he's not going to be in this game. And then they're going to try and take some deep shots. Alan Lazard, maybe St. Brown gets an opportunity. They had a play action shot play to Big Bob Tonyan against a corner that Roger just missed last week. So, it's definitely an element of the offense that they're missing right now.
I didn't realize Valdes-Scantling was hurt. That seems like it's kind of a big deal.
It is a big deal. They were able to make up for it against the Steelers with Randall Cobb and some of that middle of the field stuff. So I think that it probably necessitates some shuffling of how teams are going to want to play the Packers. But we only have really one game of evidence to tell us, and the Steelers are our unique beast because of what they're able to do with the way that they're multiple. So
Multiple this year as well. Just to point that out, they have been doing a variety of things. And Ricardo Allen getting back this week might mean you see a lot of three safety looks. The Bengals had three safeties on the field for like 21 plays against the Vikings in week one, and Allen got hurt in that game. He coming back this week, you might see a lot of that depending on the personnel the Packers present them with to try to help with Davante Adams.
All right, a lot more to come on this crossover edition, Locked on Packers, Locked on Bengals. We'll get to that in just a second. But before we do, let me tell you about our friends over at BetOnline, the number one place for you to get all of your sports gambling needs met. They've got a new interface. They do a terrific job getting all kinds of props, opportunities, everything you could want from a site where you put a little money down to make a little money as well. Bet Online has it there for you. Basketball right around the corner, plus a ton of football. Golf is never gone. It's never gone. We've got a big match coming up in Thanksgiving, Bryson DeChambeau against Brooks Koepka. So plenty of opportunities for you to make some money on all of the sports knowledge that you acquire as a listener to the Locked On Podcast Network. Use the promo code LOCKS15 to get Lock On to get 50% deposit bonus. That's promo code Locked On to get that 50% deposit bonus when you sign up. All right, great to talk to Jake. We'll be back tomorrow, live stream 5:30 Central Time, 6:30 Eastern. What is that? 3:30 Pacific Time, just in case that's you. Did I do that math right? I hope so. Subscribe to The Leap, subscribe on YouTube. We are starting to get some nice traction on YouTube. Shout out to everyone watching. What's up? I'm waving. Follow me on Twitter, Peter_Bukowski. Follow the podcast on Twitter, Locked On Packers. Like us on Facebook. Subscribe to the podcast, iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you find podcasts, you will find Locked On Packers. And anytime you want to hit us up on the Locked On Packers fan hotline, you can do that 920-341-3775 to stay Locked On Packers.